You see this? I love this group because they are willing to introduce themselves. You want me to do the honors? Okay. Suzanne Farr has spent her adult life working to build a broad-based social and economic change movement. In particular, she has focused on the elimination of sexism, racism, and economic injustice. Okay, she's gone to sleep for the night. she's on the East Coast, dealing with the time change. A theme in her work is how oppressions are interconnected, as are the people who are targeted by them. The founder of the Women's Project in Arkansas, Farr was on the staff for 19 years. From 1999 until 2004, she was the director of the Historic Highlander Research and Education Center. She is the author of Homophobia, a Weapon of Sexism, and In the Time of the Right, Reflections on Liberation. Suzanne Farr.
I just want to say what a privilege and what an honor it is to be here. And thanks for that story about Rosa Parks. We at Highlander know that story really well. You know, that's where she came for a number of meetings with people from around the South and to create that whole strategy. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Like Ruthie said, I had to spend the afternoon slicing and dicing my talk because I got so excited about finally being able to have this big old public conversation on something that I had been thinking about for a long time. I wrote this little article in the late 80s on the professionalization of the battered women's movement, and after that got really obsessed with this whole idea of, well, this is a U.S.-based notion, but what I'm going to refer to over and over tonight is the 501c3. And I just have witnessed so much time spent by nonprofit organizations in fundraising and in worrying about fundraising and diverting their energy and their time into fundraising. I've seen the dreadful competition among organizations for little pots of money. I've seen the loss of political force and movement building, and it has just been so worrisome in a deep way to me. I've wanted to write about it and just haven't, but I wanted to write about the lived experience of watching that. Can you all hear me in the back? Oh, okay, it's just my accent, huh? I could just see you look like, what in the world is she saying? Could we have a translator, please? And just one other little piece. I think that the left or progressive people, we've been referred to as being very weak and fractured and disorganized and that kind of thing. I attribute a lot of that to three things: COINTELPRO, 501c3, capitalism. So. And I just wanted to make a little note before I start, and I'm really going to try to honor this. Does my time start now, I hope? that I'm really not here to talk about the reform of philanthropy and not to put down the good work that nonprofit organizations are doing, but for us to analyze together what the 501c3 has brought us and consider what we might do in a time of extreme and rapacious capitalism that has affected all of us, and how in that time do we fund a movement? And I recognize that this, the complexity of this issue, but in 20 minutes' time, I can't give a very nuanced analysis, so I'm going to give a big, broad, sweeping one. I'm going to start with an example of the battered women's movement, which I spent a lot of time in from about 1976 onward. In the beginnings of that movement, and I think it's an example of the 501c3 and sort of how it worked, there was so much community-based work for organizing and trying to figure out all of us as with battered women as a constituency, all of us thinking that we are battered women are us, how to make that movement led by battered women, formerly battered women, how to make it out of popular education of actually telling our stories and building the analysis out of those stories. And then we started moving to try to have credibility in communities. That was when we sought out the approval and the cooperation of churches and of clubs, as my standard thing is all the animal clubs, you know, the lions and all those folks, and local law enforcement. And we moved to get that credibility. We worked very hard on that. And then enters the 501c3 and enters social workers. And this is not to put down social workers, because radical social workers were much in the formation of that movement. And the entry of the government, where suddenly a master's in social work became a requirement, both from within and without the movement, for the leadership of the movement, for the directorship of shelters. And we moved to this thing called professionalization, where suddenly that domestic violence became an individualized issue that was a mental health issue, and it required therapists rather than community leaders. I think in that movement, our last big act of defiance was the rejection of the Department of Justice grant for $600,000 because they refused to let us talk clearly and openly about lesbian battering and would not allow us to talk about race in the way in which we wanted to. And that led to a split in what was we thought of as the movement then, where people divided from kind of the left to the middle and pursued that government funding. And with government funding came the need for certification, and we ended up in bed with the Department of Justice. Kind of makes you think of sadomasochism, doesn't it? And also with that developed, I think, strong embedded racism, because when you get your linkage with the government and with the Department of Justice, it moves you into those values. Not that it was a pure movement before that, but that got to the embedded part, which we have learned in this, it's a word that we know so well now from the war on Iraq. So somebody else was writing the rules for our work, and we were trying to shape those rules and to defend what we had. And I think it began to very, very rapidly take out organizing from the mix and take out constituency involvement and get top-down leadership. That was happening simultaneously from my period of time of working with the Battered Women's Movement from 96 onward with the rise of the right wing in this country. Not the new right. It wasn't a new right, but really the development and the rise of the right. And we felt that in particular with Reaganomics and the anti-taxation movement that was very racialized. In fact, all social issues became racialized at that time. And with the drive through Reagan to eliminate human services, to start cutting those and cutting those and cutting those. So it was interesting, at the time that the government was moving more to the right, we were moving to try to have relationships with the government. So it's, you know, you can see how that skewed our work. And I actually believe that the government should pay for direct services. I mean, that's why I think we should pay taxes and we should have those services paid for. And I think that we need good liberals to shape those services. But the question that's called, will that put an end to violence against women? And can the end of violence against women be done without constituency-based organizing? So it's through thinking about that movement, I began to dwell on this issue. And here's the things that I've seen related to the 501c3 and my sort of life of organizing. I've seen the increase of charity and volunteerism for the care of people. That's risen. I've seen the increase of service delivery, particularly from low-paid workers in the nonprofit sector. I've seen the decrease in organizing, increase in financial dependence on foundation and government funding for nonprofits, decrease of membership organizations, increase of professionalization, decrease of constituency leadership, and then organizations modeled on corporations. I cannot tell you what it did to me the first time I heard an organization that was a nonprofit refer to its director as a CEO. It knocked me out. And then they said CFO, and I thought, what the hell is that? And then someone said, well, Suzanne, that says Chief Financial Officer. I said, oh. And I'll talk a little bit more about what it means to model loan organizations. And then with that became the stronger creation of this nonprofit sector, all linked in great part to the 501c3. So a few minutes about foundations. This is going to be the duh moment. Foundations are of great benefit to the individuals that endow them. You know, the majority of their money goes to the arts, universities, culture. A little bit goes to us. But here are the benefits they get. They get tax write-offs. They get the appeasement of their conscience so they can make billions of dollars in the exploitation of workers and then make a few billion in gifts to their foundations. They get the control of people, our vision, and our strategies, and they can make the world safe for capitalism. I have a little quotation from McGeorge Bundy, because you wouldn't believe that just from me. He was the former president of the Ford Foundation, and he said that he agreed that everything the Ford Foundation did could be regarded as, quote, making the world safe for capitalism, reducing social tensions by helping to comfort the afflicted, provide safety valves for the angry, and improve the functioning of government. Hello. As Paul Kibble says, we can easily become, in nonprofit organizations, the buffer between those who possess and control little of the wealth and those who have the power and control the wealth. And the buffers become people like us, like social workers, teachers, police, that keep people from rising up and changing the world. So the impact of the 501c3, competition, that is, you don't see groups working together in a very easy manner, making partnerships and coalitions. It's almost a joke to me when I think about the coalitions that we have tried to form at times because of this underlying competition, competition, competition for the few crumbs of money that are available to us. Professionalization, that corporate model thing, surely if you all get funding right now, someone is talking to you about outcomes and deliverables. Let me just say, that is the language of a business plan. And that comes from those corporate offices of those foundations. We get short-term vision because the funding is on a one-year, a two-year, or a three-year cycle. Rather than us thinking about the long-term, we think about that short-term and write it down on a piece of paper, and that becomes our vision. We are become in bed with capitalists is an impact. We never get more than reform because we're not going to get funded for the revolutionary change. We get loss of community leadership and involvement. We get delivery of services instead of organizing. We get the use of ourselves to do the work of the government as volunteers and low-paid workers and nonprofits. We get the reduction of our ability to lobby, even, you know, these new laws that are now coming out. We get the loss of youth involvement because of the professionalization and how one can enter. We make the world safe for capitalism, we're that buffer zone, and then dreadfully, dreadfully, there's a chilling effect on dissent, on saying the truth, naming the truth, listening to what people say, and making change based on that. So truisms for me are these. It is the responsibility of the government to provide services. We can be engaged in that, but it is our tax money, and it should be given back to us in taking care of human needs. It's a truism to me that it is our job collectively to make change and that we should not expect foundations and corporate entities to pay us to do it. I think of these groups going on a foundation visit, writing grants and asking for money from foundations. I think of AIM, the American Indian Movement, saying, okay, we're here, would you give us a little money for this thing that we're going to do. I think of the Black Panthers. I think of the landless people in Brazil. I think of the Weather Underground going on a foundation visit. I think of the Zapatistas. I think of Hamas. I think of the early labor movement. I think of the Students of Democratic Society. I think of the ANC going before the Africana foundations. And when I think of these groups, I don't just think of revolutionaries. You know what I think? Membership, membership, membership. Thank you.